The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, 4 minutes past nine. A very good morning to you. It's Wednesday, the 15th of November, 2023, and you are genuinely very welcome along to another edition of the 9 to noon show. How are you all keeping? It seems to be a nice, bright, fresh day out there across the Northwest. Or hopefully it's like that wherever you are anyway. We are open for business now. The lines are open for you to comment on some of the items we've got lined up for you. Raise your own issues. Have your own conversations with us as well by WhatsApp or texting 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. You can voice note to WhatsApp on that number as well. Or Caroline Orr is back. 07491 25000. She is taking your calls alongside Shannon Wilkie. So you can also email us comments at highlandradio.com. All right, let's look at the front of some of the newspapers today and inside the papers as well to see what's making the headlines there. The Finn Valley Voice, Ballybuffet mother is Netwatch Donegal Family Carer of the Year. This year's Netwatch Donegal Family Carer of the Year is Ciara Lynch from Ballybuffet. Congratulations, Ciara. She accepted the award at a function in the Central Hotel Donegal Town on Wednesday on behalf of all the carers who work tirelessly behind closed doors with little support, not vastly reduced and vastly reduced services. The Donegal Post this morning reports a call for an immediate stop on new road traffic management in Donegal Town. The new one-way traffic system in Donegal Town is continuing to cause controversy. One local resident, Shane McCauley, who's also a civil engineer, says it's time to call a halt on the project until it's re-evaluated and to engage with residents and business owners and possibly revise the design based on that, and then maybe more forward with a plan. Let me just read that again. To engage with residents and business owners and possibly revise the design based on that, and then maybe move forward with a plan. He said that the new system, as well intentioned as it is currently creating chaos for drivers getting around the town. And he has received the backing of Mayor of Donegal Town, Mayor Padraig Kennedy, and over 100 signatories at the time of writing who've supported an online petition calling for it to stop. Now, we spoke to Padraig Kennedy at the time that work was underway, and it was let's wait and see how things go. But obviously, his view has changed. We also spoke to a representative of business there, and they seem to be of the view it will free up parking on the Diamond, make traffic move more freely. I had my doubts, but I thought, well, you know, if they're saying that it's good for Donegal Town, or who might say otherwise, but just as a person who lives close to it, I thought, well, what is the situation? What is the problem they're trying to fix there? And I mentioned yesterday what I see as the key problems. Businesses reserving parking spaces, which I'm not sure what the legality of that is. And also buses, it's effectively a bus stop, and people double parking to go around their daily business. But anyway, we'll talk about that a little later on in the show. The Inish Times this morning, I'll just double check it is the Inish Times. It is, in fact, yep. The quick reaction of locals prevented the potential flooding to homes on the outskirts of Buncrana following heavy rain brought by Storm Debbie, a local councillor has said. Calls have been made for action to be taken to deal with the flood threat after heavy rain caused a road and a field to flood. Water from a stream which runs under Maharinchur Road spilled onto the road at around 7 a.m. on Monday morning. Local councillor Nicholas Crossan said properties on the road and on Lisowen Court were saved from serious problems due to locals who helped divert water from the road by digging a track. You can't beat local knowledge. So fair play to them. They saw the problem. They came up with a solution and saved those properties. On to the Nationals now. Much talk about RTE and the changes they're making there. A salary cap of €250,000 will be introduced at RTE. A cap of €250,000. Caroline, please, could you cancel my application? Oh, not my application, but my offer from RTE. They offered me I'm not going there. No, a €250,000 cap. That's no fun. A salary cap of €250,000 will be introduced at RTE in tandem with plans to shrink the broadcaster's workforce by 400 people between now and 2028. Director General Kevin Backhurst told staff yesterday, as the government confirmed it would give the broadcaster an additional £56 million in funding to overcome a short-term cash crisis. Mr. Backhurst said RTE would remain a substantial organisation despite the loss of one in five jobs by 2028 and the requirement to close a 10 million euro gap in 2024 between its total funding and the money is needed to operate the service. Some 40 redundancies will initially be sought and cuts to content will be confirmed in the coming weeks. They're also looking to... well, I'll go through some of the wages here. Joe Duffy, Claire Byrne and Miriam O'Callaghan will face salary reductions under the new cap as they negotiate new contracts, with the latest figure showing Duffy on €351,000, Byrne on €280,000 and O'Callaghan on €263,500. So they're going to have to take pay cuts, we're told, to €250,000, but are they really? Because I imagine... the likes of Joe Duffy, for example, he gets one payment for his radio show. He does other work too, though, doesn't he? He has a couple of TV shows and what have you. So I'm sure they're not going to be stuck on €250,000. Where there is a will, there is a way. But I also noticed too that they're opening regional hubs. And you just can't help but wonder the connection between the state broadcaster and government. And I don't mean in any bad way as such, but if you look at how in terms of the services, you know, you'll be very familiar with Betty Holmes and DACC's map, which shows issues or a lack of services above the Dublin Galway line. So that's well established, we know that. You can look at what the situation is with rail above the Dublin Galway line. You can talk about investment in education above this Dublin Galway line, and staying with education. You can talk about issues as it relates to no professors in north of a line very similar to this. Regional imbalance, particularly a problem above the Dublin Galway line. And RTE is to establish regional hubs outside of Dublin, and none of them are above the Dublin-Galway line. So there is a pattern there that I don't think you have to be a conspiracy theorist to note that there definitely is, both in the national media as it relates to the state media, and certainly in government. It does feel there is an issue in doing anything, or doing enough, sorry, or doing equal above this Dublin-Galway line. Is that how you might see it? 086 60 25,000. As I say, it's just an observation. I'm not drawing a conclusion, just saying that that is the way it appears to be. The Irish Independent this morning. More than half of the businesses in the state that use gas are now in arrears, and a quarter of households are behind on their gas bill. Shock figures from the energy regulator show that 56% of non-domestic gas customers were behind on their payments to their supplier in the July to September period, and 23% of households were in arrears on their gas bills. Almost 15,000 commercial firms that use gas are in arrears. The figures for the third quarter of the year is more than double that it was for the April to June period, which is an indication of the struggles businesses are facing in just keeping the roof above the head. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and two-thirds of local authorities are failing to meet environmental targets, the latest report from the Environmental Protection Agency reveals. The annual study measures each authority's performance against the delivery of 20 national enforcement priorities, such as waste water management, water quality and air and noise pollution. The EPA requires local authorities to achieve a score of excellent or strong in at least 70% of their targets. And in just a bit of good news and a bit of credit to Donegal County Council, it is doing very well at 80%. Only one county council has achieved 100%, and that is Kildare. Meath is at 90%, Fingal 85%, as is Leitrim and Monaghan. Donegal at 80%, so it's pretty impressive. Then you have other counties like Roscommon, Kilkenny, 30-35% respectively. So, as I say, credit where it's due. Donegal County Council meeting those targets. Now, staying with environmental issues, this is the Star. The country's environmental watchdog warns that households and businesses are still putting most of their waste in the wrong bins. Claims were made yesterday in the latest report from the Environmental Protection Agency. It revealed that two-thirds of waste found in general waste bins should have been put into either recycling or organic bins. The EPA has calculated this amounts to 2 million tonnes of municipal waste being produced every year, and two-thirds of that doesn't need to be there. Now, the one thing that confuses me a little bit about this, and maybe it's an incorrect observation, But it does seem to be, at least on some occasions, where both the black and blue bin, or whatever the colour combinations are, go into the same bin lorry. Is that what you've observed? You thought that's what you've said? I know, I think it was Deputy Parv McLaughlin stated something along these lines as well. And then it's sorted back at base, if you know what I mean. So if that is the case, why are you blaming the consumer here? We're probably doing our best. But sometimes it does seem to be the case, and I'm not saying across the board, and maybe some in the industry will let me know, that all the bins kind of seem to go into the one lorry. The Sun this morning, a new European report has slammed Ireland over how it deals with violence against women. The Council of Europe's experts flagged several issues where improvements is urgently needed, including lenient sentencing of sex attackers. The Irish Sun has been leading the drive, it says, to raise awareness of violence against women through its Call This Ad campaign. The campaign had allowed victims to talk openly about how it impacted their lives in a bid to spark a change in behaviour and culture. A European Council delegation recently visited Ireland to assess the country on how it was preventing and combating domestic violence. The group of experts on action against violence against women and domestic violence, known as Grevio, yesterday published its first report evaluating Ireland's implementation of the Istanbul Convention. And in 2019, Ireland ratified the international treaty to tackle violence against women, but we're not getting necessarily a glowing review. Sex attackers in this country are getting too lenient sentences. Lastly, and certainly not least, more than 200 dead patients, including babies and children, were buried in a mass grave inside the grounds of Garza Hospital yesterday. More than 100 members of the medical team at the Al-Shifa Hospital took 6 hours to dig it. Dr. Adrian Albert said, "We started off at 8:30 in the morning and finished around 3 p.m. He said they had little choice because the bodies had been left for days and decomposed. And is Israeli action around some of those hospitals at the moment. Tanks inside hospitals and people are in there sick as well. It's horrendous is what's going on. Very hard to watch. We were speaking last week about the teaching crisis in primary schools. 800 vacancies currently, up to 2,000 expected in the not-too-distant future. But it's not just that sector. There is a teacher recruitment and retention crisis in Irish second-level schools as well, and it is worsening. That's the findings of a new survey carried out in over 100 schools by the Principals and Deputy Principals Association of the Teachers Union of Ireland. Joanne Irwin is Assistant General Secretary with the TUI and joins us now. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks for being with us. Okay, so can you describe in greater detail what impact this is having on secondary schools?
Yeah, well, I suppose to say schools are displaying remarkable innovation in trying to deal with these challenges, but the reality is that there's no more flexibility to give. And we are seeing schools nationally losing subjects, losing practical subjects in particular, like woodwork, engineering, construction studies, areas where the department are actually pushing students to go into the apprenticeship area, but they're now not getting that experience in our second level schools. Just in the context of Donegal, I've spoken to, and I represent all the schools in Donegal, subjects aren't being lost as such in Donegal, but school principals are very much cautious about expanding the curriculum. So new subjects that have been introduced in the last few years, like computer science or PE as an examinable subject, are not being delivered in all the schools in Donegal because the principals are afraid to offer the subjects to the students, only to find out then that they can't get a teacher in the class to teach those subjects. The minister, I suppose, has announced two new subjects from September 25, which we welcomed. One of those are drama, film and theatre studies and climate action and sustainability development. But we're very concerned we're not actually going to have the teachers to teach those subjects, or it is only going to be the preserve of large schools in urban areas where they can actually get the teachers to deliver those subjects.
So just to be clear, 77% of schools advertised positions in the previous 6 months for which no teacher applied. 64% of unfilled vacancies due to recruitment and retention difficulty. Now, just so I'm clear, because we get texts after these conversations which confuse me a little bit. If I'm a newly qualified teacher, fully qualified in secondary school, got my papers and everything, can I apply for one of these jobs and be given a full-time contract and all the bells and whistles that I might expect, perhaps in another country?
you can apply for the job, but the problem is you will not get a full-time job. In post-primary, so all of our second-level schools, 70% of those students who have just qualified will not get a job for full hours. So they'll get a fraction of the hours. They might get 6-7 hours a week, which is not sustainable.
But how does that work, though? Because we've got all these vacancies, we've got newly qualified teachers, and can you explain to me why they can't get those jobs?
Yeah, I think the problem is the Department of Education have a very strict teacher allocation model. So it goes by the number of students in the school, which means if you're in a smaller school, you don't have as many hours to give to a teacher. So if you want to offer physics, for example, in a school in Dublin, you can put maybe physics and chemistry and biology together. You can get a full-time job. But you might only want to teach physics in Bundoran or Ballyshannon, and they can only give 6 hours a week. So they're going to where they can get full-time jobs. And unfortunately, we've seen for the last 10 years that has been abroad. It hasn't even been in Ireland.
But how do you fix this then?
Well, I think one of the things that could be done overnight is in order to encourage more teachers to come home from other jurisdictions is to give them credit for the service that they do abroad. So if you come from a European country and say you work 10 years in a European country and you come back to Ireland, you get those 10 years credited. So you move 10 points up the salary scale, and the teacher's salary scale, for example, takes 25 years to get to the top of it. It's the longest scale in the public sector. Whereas if you come from Dubai or you come from Australia or outside of the EU, you don't get any credit for that. Okay. So they're not coming back for that reason.
But say, for instance, that wasn't an issue for a teacher, and of course it is going to be. If they move back to Dubai and apply for one of these positions that there's been no application for, can they get a full-time job in the school?
No, not under the current teacher allocation model.
That's what the problem is. People are looking to save, rent, buy a house. They're not going to move back for 6 or 7 or 8 hours and they're going to go somewhere else where they're valued. I mean, the system is broken from an outsider looking in, Joanne, with respect. Because I've got parents that are going to be listening, say, my daughter's fully qualified. We're going to have to say she's going to have to leave to Australia or Dubai or England. And yet we're seeing here that people aren't even applying for jobs here. It's crazy. It seems crazy to me anyway.
It is crazy, and it doesn't make any sense to us either. And we've been calling for years, you know, let them have a full-time job when they come out. They'll not go away then. Most people, they might go away for a year or two for the experience, but most people want to work in Ireland or return to Ireland. They have family here. They want to be close to their home, but they can't do it exactly for the reason that you have said. You can't live on 6 or 7 hours a week, and you might only be in for 1 hour a day, which means you get no entitlement to anything else on top of those 6 hours a week.
Right. So where do we go from here? I'm sorry to return to, but I mean, this is fun. But we could have every TD in the Dáil debating this for 6 weeks. But unless these things are changed, things are just going to get worse and worse.
Absolutely. And I mean, the first thing that has to be done is looking at the whole allocation model and how teachers are allocated to schools. I mean, if I just look on the Donegal instance, for example, it's quite difficult to get teachers to go to our island schools. Because years ago, if you worked in an island school, you got an island allowance to cover the cost of the ferry because you were going offshore. That was pulled 10 years ago. If you teach in a school that teaches through Irish, you used to get an additional allowance because it's more difficult maybe to get textbooks and stuff like that to teach through Irish. That was pulled 10 years ago. We have schools in Donegal who are transitioning in the Gaeltacht area to be Irish medium schools. They're having difficulty getting teachers because if you can teach in Irish and you can teach in English, it's easier to teach in English. Mm. And if you don't get the additional payment to teach in Irish, you're not going to do it. But the main thing is permanent contracts. I mean, we're not opposed to having a 1 year probationary period. That's in law. Everybody should have a probationary period. But having to apply for a job at the end and teaching as well at the end of the first year, your job is automatically terminated and you have to re-interview to get that job again. That's just ridiculous. So you're interviewing twice for the same job.
So when we talk about, I'm sorry for my silly questions, but it's just to get to the bottom of it. So when we talk about a vacancy in the schools, 77% of schools didn't even have an applicant. So what job's actually being likely to be advertised there? A job for 6, 7, 8 hours a week? Is that the vacancy that no one's applied for?
Yeah, and the problem is schools advertise for subjects. So they say we need a math teacher, we need a chemistry teacher, we need a home economics teacher. And it's only when you drill down into it and you see, well, how many hours is this? Is this a full-time job? Now, schools in Dublin are having a real problem with the accommodation crisis and the shortage of accommodation. That's going to expand. So schools in Dublin are now seeing this and they're saying, okay, we will offer permanent jobs day one. We will offer full-time contracts day one. That has helped alleviate things in Dublin. But that, I mean, there's an accommodation crisis everywhere in the country now. Mm,
but so what that's doing is what we're seeing is rather than it being a national drain, i.e., you know, the talent from Ireland being lost to other countries, it could be a drain from the rest of Ireland with teachers being drawn to Dublin.
It can. And then what we've actually seen this year is a lot of teachers in Dublin who just left their job completely in order to move back to the West. So we have teachers who I know who have resigned in Dublin because they can't get anywhere to rent to move back to schools in Donegal. So in a way, it's a slight gain for Donegal, the accommodation crisis in Dublin. But would you come to Donegal for 6 hours or would you go for a permanent full-time job in Dublin?
Of course, you simply just wouldn't, and that problem will not be fixed until that's addressed. And it's not only that. Why would you even start your education 4 hard years of slog to come out of it and be treated like that, to have your contract instantly terminated after a year or to be offered 6 or 7 hours here or there? Like, it's simply, it's completely and utterly unattractive.
And you've actually hit on another problem there as well. It now takes 6 years to train to be a teacher.
Oh, six, right,
when you do a 4-year degree, you then now have to do a 2-year master's in education at a cost of up to $15,000 just for the tuition for the 2 years PME, which is the postgraduate master in education, just to qualify as a teacher. That's ridiculous. It never was a 2-year master program to qualify. It means that a huge cohort of people who would make excellent teachers can't afford the tuition. Now, that's not counting accommodation costs for those students. They now have to do an extra year than what like I did or others did years ago, which is just mad.
And how does that work then if teachers from outside of Ireland and that aren't Irish wish to move here to teach? They before they could even consider getting a job, they'd have to do those additional 2 years, or are we just catching up to qualifications in other countries?
To a large extent, we have a higher bar than other countries. But if you qualified, for example, in the UK or you qualified anywhere in Europe, then you can get registered with the teaching council here in Ireland. So a lot of people are going abroad to do their teaching council qualification, which might only be a year somewhere else. They're coming back to Ireland, but they do have a shortfall in that they must do a history of education exam. But I mean, to do a history of education exam and 1 year less of study, it is more attractive for people to do that.
It's incredibly convoluted. A caller says, I've worked for 10 years, only got full hours this year. This delayed my ability to have children and to buy a house. And the price of a house since has gone through the roof. They're blaming the current government for it. But I mean, I'd say that's pretty typical. Right, OK, Joanne, it's been really quite insightful. As I say, sorry for the basic questions, but it gets me an understanding of it and it's worse than I thought. But we appreciate your time, Joanne. Take care of yourself.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Bye-bye. That is Joanne Irwin from Donegal, who's Assistant General Secretary with the TUI. Right. Let's go to... actually, you know what? We'll take a quick break because we're going to talk about traffic in Donegal Town very shortly. Stay where you are. And we are going to Donegal Town. Shane McCauley joins us on the programme now. Shane, thanks for your time today.
No problem, sir.
Good to have you on. Right, OK, so when this work began, we spoke to a couple of people down there, one business owner, the Mayor, Pádraig Kennedy. They seemed to think that this was you know, it's going to be a bit of a hard take as the work was ongoing, but it would be a means to an end and could be good for Donegal Town. Did you ever have that view, Shane, or have you questioned this development from the get-go?
No, definitely without a doubt. I would be a very optimistic person by nature, and I'd be all in favour of anything that would be seen as a positive development on any community. So yes, I was very happy to see some development occurred in Donegal Town, and I certainly held my breath in such time till I seen how it started to plan out. But unfortunately, my experiences in this last 5 or 6 weeks have led me to develop some grave concerns about where it's going. So
to the point where some are calling for it to stop altogether with further consultation. So is it how the works are ongoing and the disruption it's causing that's a problem for you, or is it how the road system will work once completed?
It'll be the latter. It'll be how we're going to end up with unnecessary traffic in areas that we never had before. And I think it's an uncoordinated approach, maybe, and less of a test regime and more about hitting the ground running and getting concrete in. Look, I'm a project manager myself of a background. I'm a qualified civil engineer. I know all about contracts and I know all about how to run similar schemes. I'd have to say last night I had a very detailed conversation with the council engineer, Mr. Mark Sweeney, and it was very good to return a call to me. He was busy all day yesterday, as a lot of us are, and he returned, and we had a great conversation about it, you know, and he certainly opened up my eyes to other opportunities. He highlighted the fact that I may not be aware of a bigger picture, and I'm very willing to consider all them kind of things. So it's right now, I had to agree to disagree with him, Greg.
Well, has the campaign to have the work stopped been suspended from your perspective?
No, absolutely not. No, there's a lot of people that have joined in behind the thing there, and I'll have to stand by my initial reaction. Yeah. As part of that, I was sent a couple of updates. I told them that I was speaking to another radio station the day before. I told them I was speaking to you, and Mark has arranged for one of the council engineers to come back to me, and I'll look at the detailed design from there, and I'll try to simulate a report and possibly a public meeting just to give people a chance to follow up and understand what I have learned to date, you know, so I'll follow up with it.
My initial question was, what problem is this work looking to fix? And to be honest with you, it was explained to me. I still don't get it. I mean, I would like to see random blocking off of parking, double parking, the Diamond effectively being a bus stop. If those issues were eliminated and see how traffic moved then, or what?
I think that you've hit the nail on the head. And I think that's primarily what other people in the community are pointing towards. Look, there's bigger issues there. These buses have been a detriment to our living and livability factor in Donegal for years. And people, like, in fairness, it was mentioned again last night that it was an ongoing since 2015, and there's a plan in place, and they're on the verge of having all this relocated.
Yeah, but we don't know what the impact. We don't know what the impact of those buses being relocated
exactly.
would
so they
have.
Should have waited. They put the cart before the horse in this case. If they wanted to go to a one way system, was going to help improve down the stream, they should have waited until they got the buses first, and then went down a one way system. You know, I keep on saying this. I believe from what I'm looking at right now, and the clear indications are that it's not working, and it's never going to work in this regard if they don't open up water. Street to a two-way system, I think the town is going to continue to suffer.
Pádraig Kennedy's with us as well, Mayor of Donegal Town. Pádraig, as I said, you know, I when I had the initial conversation with you a couple of weeks ago, I couldn't see what problem this was trying to fix or how it would fix a problem. You didn't have any issue with it a few weeks ago. Has your mind been changed? As if you changed?
Absolutely. Good morning, Greg. Yeah, I know, and I say we talked about it 5 or 6, 5 weeks ago, and I suppose, you know, thinking maybe it would be a good job, but, and there is certain streets in Donegal Town that would benefit by one way, like Castle Street would definitely benefit because the width is not there.
The width isn't there because people park on the street opposite the castle. Is that are we on about the same street?
No, that's Tyrconnell Street.
Tyrconnell Street, right. Which is Castle Street then? I'm terrible.
You know, just along the water's edge there, just between the two bridges.
I get you. I'm terrible with that road names. Go ahead, Pádraig.
But Water Street is kind of one of the main arteries of the town, which benefit, you know, people from O'Clery Avenue and that side of town would come up Water Street, turn left, head for the school, the chapel, Lytle, or whatever, head for Letterkenny that way. And making it just the one-way system just forces people then over into the middle of the town where they don't need it. It adds to their journey. And I know people could say, oh, you could go out and go round the bypass, but that's also adding to your journey. And, you know, it's just that one part of the development, if that was changed, I think it would alleviate a whole lot of problem towards the centre of the town. And I understand, you know, that we need to upgrade the footpaths and make it safer for elderly and people with disabilities to access and cross and stuff like that. But, you know, forcing more traffic into the centre of the town is not solving any of that problem there. Like, you know, I just think it's strangling the town. And I think, as Shane says, we need to stop and take a look at it and say, right, okay, we don't think this is going to work. You'll probably remember back at the Tullyair Junction, which was the NRA were involved there, and it was the main added on to the bypass. and there was no way there was going to be a roundabout there because it slows traffic down. But after several accidents on there, thankfully not too serious, but the NRA had to take a look at it again and rethink, and now we have
That was one of the most bizarre pieces of road infrastructure I've ever come across in my life. But as you say, thankfully its life was short-lived.
So people, you know, like I initially said, yeah, maybe the one-way system's a good job. I think I am wrong in this, making that statement. There's certain parts of it, yeah, it will be a good job. The upgrade of the footpaths and the upgrade of the road surface, be a great job. We're all for development and pushing on. We're not against development in Donegal Town. And it's a great town and a great county.
Mm.
And like with this, the award that we got there, fourth in the world, like it's only going to add to traffic and people coming to Donegal and want to see and enjoy Donegal. But if they can't get through, if they're stuck in traffic in Donegal Town for 20, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, in November, what is not going to be like in the summertime?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, some towns flourish after a bypass, other towns disappear. It would be a shame if the success of Donegal Town post-bypass was lost because it became just a place you simply wouldn't want to go near. All right, Pádraig Kennedy, thank you very much indeed, and only because of traffic, obviously. Helen, are you there? Have you a view on this?
Well, I actually agree with Pádraig there. The traffic congestion in the town centre is ridiculous, and the business people of the town is going to lose out. Especially now, coming up to Christmas, and if the Donegal Taste of Donegal Festival was on, I would dread to think what the traffic would be like at that stage. You know, it's just not on. Where I live on the main street, there's been traffic way out past the hospital trying to get into Donegal Town.
Mm-hmm.
This is not acceptable. Yes, I agree. Some of the footpaths need updating and making safe for people to walk on, but it's just not on. And you going down Water Street is ridiculous. The council has to stop now and rethink everything, and include the people of the community in it.
Mm-hmm.
Have an open meeting in some of the hotels.
Yeah, all right, and poll what people think. Thanks for that, Helen. I do appreciate your time this morning. So, Shane, so what is going to change here? Many people will be very familiar with Donegal Town. So I'm coming in from Ballybuffet, past the hospital, past the church. Do I progress in when the road is completed? Do I continue in there to the Diamond, or what's the story?
The impact coming from that side of the town is very minimal.
Right, so I'm coming in then from Killybegs.
Right now, so if you come in from Killybegs, you'll still have the main routes in, right? But where you get into the changes now is when you come from the northeast and the northwest of the town. All the people from Drumroosk, Killymire, Law Esk, that kind of region that come in to join the Diamond, they no longer now have access to the hospital, Heroes Boys School, Main Street, and any side of the businesses in the town up along there. They are forced into the Diamond under the current arrangement, because from where the existing entrance, the old credit union, or where Quinn Meehan have their business there at the moment, you now have to take a right up to Connell Street. You're not allowed to continue down past Erwin's. Business that is facing difficulty there, spoken to them. Down into McGee's, all McGee's people are forced to go right. They won't be able to take easy access if they're living in St. Joseph's Avenue, or again going up out to Legony. They're all
so if you wanted to go, apologies to those of you outside of the Donegal Town area. So if you're say for instance you pass John Bosco, right, and you want to go to Irwin's, you would have to turn right before Irwin's, go all the way around the Diamond, turn left at the fish and tackle shop, Charlie's shop, and come down that way. That would be the loop just to go to Irwin's from that side of town.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, okay.
And
that's
added
really
to that,
remarkable.
The MART traffic, they now will have to break the law to go in and take a left to go up the old MART lane.
Mm.
I was advised last night that they're not meant to be doing that, that they should be using the railway road entrance, but they're not. So they're having, you know, not break the law. You know what I'm coming from?
I don't understand. Yeah, it's not the rules of the road necessarily. So,
you know,
we heard from Pádraig there that if Water Street, I think he mentioned, was left two-way, that would fix a lot of the problems. Do you share that view?
I share that view. Yeah, absolutely.
And with your engineering background, can you see...
There's concerns with that, Greg, right? There is, under the current specifications, roadworks, whatever, as Mark emphasised last night, Mark Sweeney, there are issues with it. But there was always issues with it. And I've been born and bred like so many others. It was never an issue that was insurmountable. There wasn't traffic jams backed up Water Street or backed up over past Erwin's waiting to get up and down. That never existed.
Never seen it.
It's not an issue as far as I'd be concerned. So return that to two-way. That's where I suggested that people should suspend works. I'm not suggesting, I'm a contracts person, as I said earlier. You can't turn around when you're in a contract. There's 900,000 of works to be done by St. Patrick's Day, which is a great plan. So don't stop them there. Get them working on the other areas. Stop and look at what you're talking about going up and down Water Street. Maybe get it revised. Unfortunately, they already have built a curb far too far out in the road now to get back to two-way, so there's going to have to be a bit of demo and repair works if it is to be reversed, but better late than never, and now's the time to look at it.
Right, OK, we'll see. Is that whatever's being built opposite Super Value, is that part of this?
There's a national strategy about traffic calming. Other people will break it down, but there's a traffic calming pedestrianisation improvement scheme that's happening. That's a disaster waiting to happen. As I said, the morning before, I was coming down early morning on my way to the work, and I met a tipper truck, and he was taking his fair share of the road. I was on my side, and it was too close for comfort, and I wouldn't let when other children and families.
But unfortunately, the way the plan is to slow traffic, we've seen it on the four lanes, we've seen it at Capri and other areas. If narrow the road, and eventually everyone slows down. But anyway, we shall see. It's probably, as you say, another problem waiting to happen. Thanks for your time, Shane, this morning. I do appreciate it. Have a good day, and we'll see what the council have to say on all of that. And thanks to Porrick, and also to Helen. If you've any view on those traffic developments in Donegal Town, feel free to share them. Kieran Mullally is an author and former correspondent at RTE and a community development worker, and he joins us to discuss the some of the changes at RTE that have been initially leaked the day before yesterday and released somewhat more in full yesterday. Staffing at the organisation is to be reduced by 400 people, according to the plan. RTE intends to produce significantly more content outside of Dublin. And the Irish government has approved funding of $56 million for RTE. Kieran, good morning to you. I suppose your initial reaction to this plan, is it enough to save the organisation, do you think?
Greg, good morning. That's I was going to say €60 million question that you're asking me to answer at the very beginning. I mean, RTE got their €60 million effectively yesterday from the government. After all the talk and the debate and the Oireachtas Committee inquiries, the government signed off on an initial €16 million to keep the place afloat up to Christmas, and there's pretty much a commitment to another 40 next year. But I have to say, I would still have concerns that what we're seeing yesterday is very much stopgap measures, and major changes have to take place. And I'll tell you why I'd say that. Firstly, I'd have concerned about, first and foremost, on a personal front, I'd have concern for the loss of jobs, 400 people losing their jobs. Now, we're being told this morning 150 of these people are coming to retirement age anyway. But even with that and losing 250 people, albeit on the voluntary redundancy scheme, you would have to have concerns about the quality of the programming coming out of RTE. I mean, nobody wants to see people lose their jobs, but certainly if RTE think they can continue to charge a licence fee, they can't expect the service to be run down. If the service is going to be affected by the disappearance of people like that, then they're back to square one. They're in big trouble. So I'd have concern about that. But, you know, what happened yesterday really had to happen in terms of the new strategy because of that issue. The licence fee has collapsed. There's a black hole in the RTE account. So why is there? Because the licence payer has lost confidence in the organisation because of the fiasco last summer.
And I think, RTE too, is there not sort of you know, maybe to some extent, there's quite a large proportion of the public that were looking for a reason not to pay the licence. And then they hear others. Like, I'm not sure it is a direct protest against RTE. I mean, look at the latest radio listenership figures that were produced. RTE made gains pretty much right across the board. Maybe it's just because of everything that's going on, a bill that the wider public feel they don't have to pay and is not necessarily a referendum on RTE.
No, I agree with you, Greg. And I think there, at all times in our history of the state broadcaster, there's always been people who did not want to pay the licence fee in the first instance. But I think, to be fair, the vast majority of people appreciate the service that RTE gives in a normal year. I mean, you see something like the RTE Investigates program, which takes a topic, a complex topic, and exposes some of the most serious issues that are going on in our society. Mm-hmm. Issues like the abuse of elderly folks in elderly homes, etc. And simplifies it, explains it, investigates it over a period of months and presents a program. I think the vast majority of people in this country will say, I will pay my license fee for that. Mm-hmm. When they see the sport coming on, the international soccer or rugby, they say, I will pay my license fee for that. But what happened last July and last summer, when RTE were found out not to be telling the truth about how much they were paying Ryan Tuberty, that's what has eroded the license.
It has too, but Kieran, from the public perspective, okay, the issue was with the overpaid presenters. Like, you know, maybe this is just what has to be done to make it profitable, but I don't think the public refused to pay their TV license. So 400 people who aren't the big earners would end up losing their jobs. So is that how RTE has to do it to save the money? Or is that RTE with being out of touch with what the people really had an issue with in the first place? Because you're still going to have people, for right or wrong, getting €250,000, or as it appears, for an hour's work, an hour and a quarter's work. And I think that's really what most people are upset about.
Yeah, well, I think what Kevin Backhurst did yesterday was actually quite clever. In the strategy, he's making it clear that they will reduce the wages of people. But Joe Duffy's salary, for instance, on face value, can't be paid that amount of money at the end of his next contract. And the ordinary person will say it was crazy money to be paying to anybody in the first instance. You know, those type of salaries are not paid in the UK. For instance, if you're in London, you won't get paid €370,000 for an afternoon radio show. And this is despite the fact that the BBC could collect up to 60 million license fees in that country. So they were always crazy, Greg. But when I say Backhurst has been clever, I think he's seen these issues as populist issues. The public will want to see changes. But he's also included a lot of stuff in the strategy about reducing the salary of management people as well, taking out a layer of management in RTE, which is something the staff have always said that was an issue, that there was far too many managers involved in the organisation. He says they're going to reduce the amount of people who are paid €100,000 mm-hmm. in the organisation. That's in the structure yesterday. And he talks about changes in terms of the governance. And this is a big one, the governance issue. People want to say, your average listener in Donegal this morning wants to be clear that the money is not being spent on some of the rubbish that was going on in the past. Mm-hmm. And we heard about it from the slush fund last year in terms of concert tickets, venues, flip-flops, all of this malarkey. They want to know, and restoring that confidence is a big issue for RTE now. They have to be seen up front to be transparent.
Yeah.
And what happened last summer was not transparent. It was mm-hmm. the opposite. It had to be dragged out of them that the director general had in fact made a private personal arrangement with regard to the payment of a presenter.
I mean, you talked about the output of RTE, Kieran, and I mean, there's respectful to the staff that's working there. I think though, there's an awful lot of people outside of the pale that don't feel the content really is necessarily reflective of the entire country, that it can be a bit of a mouthpiece for government, even when it comes down to the conflict in the Middle East. Some people feel that RTE's been a bit of a mouthpiece for Israel and not really telling the full extent of the story on the ground. So I don't think we can take it as a given that people really think the output is great and are prepared to pay for it, Kieran.
No, I mean, this is this, you're explaining the story, Greg, of state broadcasters all over the world.
Right. Okay.
You only have to look across the water at the BBC,
yeah,
where the government, the Tory government, has changed the director general and the chairperson of the board a number of times
mm-hmm.
because they didn't like the policy the organisation was going in.
Yeah.
And this is not common just to RTE. And this is the problem going forward. I mean, if the government of the day is not happy with the output from the organisation, does that mean that we're going to have a delay for a period of over 10 years in dealing with the license fee issue?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone has admitted if you're going to ask RTE to run an orchestra, to run Lyric FM, to run the Irish language TV and radio station, you have to pay for it. And if you're not prepared to pay for it, and let's face it, government after government have avoided the issue because it wasn't politically acceptable to be raising the license fee. It wasn't paid.
Yeah.
And there's an irony in that it's taken one of the biggest controversies and catastrophes really for the organisation to bring forward a new structure now, whereby it appears we are going to see, after the next election, he says quickly, we are going to see a system of a payment for a new media license, which will cover not just television radio, but independent radio and other, all other areas as well. It should have been done over 10 years ago, Greg. It wasn't done. And that's part of the reason we're in the mess we're in today.
Kieran, listen, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. Kieran Mullally there, author and former correspondent at RTE and community development worker. A caller says, government joke again, can't fix the health system or housing crisis, but throw money straight to RTE so we can watch Catherine Thomas, whoever it is, go on holiday showing Ireland's hidden corners or Fair City doing another Love Triangle storyline. But a lot of people watch them, and those programmes do bring in big advertising revenue as well, to try and be fair. 56 million euro bailout, says another, of taxpayers' money for RTE. Who are boasting about people paying people 250,000 grand a year. A lot of people don't want to pay the licence fee because of years of political bias by RTE News and current affairs programmes. Okay, that's just a couple of views as we head towards the news and obituary notices.